I, James, founded and work for HPI, but do not represent them or any of their opinions.
Welcome to Season 8, Episode 307 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is Rocktober the 2nd, 2017. Every week, we definitively answer one question about the future of tech. To do that, we take into account many factors, including the companies involved, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and waiting patiently for the good movies to come back to theaters is my brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm waiting that patiently because I still have kids, and I'm still catching up from the summer movies because I'm pathetic. But that's okay. But you know what I have had time to play with and enjoy is
the
iPhone. She got the iPhone 8 Plus. What? We've been taking portrait pictures, like classic 80s styles, which hilarious, by the way. So it's you could do the portrait where it turns the background black, like a studio portrait.
Right.
And I showed it to Jessie, and she was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? That's so 80s. And then when I hope he's not listening. When my dad was visiting, he was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, all right. Apple maybe knows their audience, but we've been playing with it. It's pretty funny.
I look forward to being able to try it one day, far from now. But it's a good segue because their ability to do that has to do with the phone's ability to understand very complex things about the world around it.
That's right.
Which leads us to the question for today. Does iPhone's understanding of the world around it work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think we're going to look at it from a couple different vectors. And specifically, we're going to focus on the iPhone X. And I'm going to call it the iPhone X, and we'll continue to call it the iPhone X because the iPhone X is a stupid name. Yes, I'm saying that. It is the letter X. And I think it makes zero sense for it to be a 10. And I think it sounds 1,000 times cooler to say iPhone X. So what am I going to call it?
You know, the thing is that Apple, like, obviously everybody had, before Mac OS, everybody had OS X. That was the operating system. Internally, they still demanded that you wrote out OS, the Roman numeral 10, and called it OS 10.
Yes.
Internally, which is just like, it didn't work for over a decade. And you're just going to, okay. I'm going to try to call it OS 10, if I'm honest, just to stick with it. And then once that tide turns and it's like more people are calling it the iPhone X than the iPhone 10, I'm switching gears. I don't even care. I'm like, whatever everywhere else goes, whichever one wins, I'm sticking with it.
It's kind of like, it's own like American lexicon where you just, oh my gosh, I didn't even set a timer. Where you just like, I don't need it to you. I got to set it on my new iOS 11. Woo! Oh, baby. Super exciting.
I'm going to
Who knows how long we've been talking. That's cool. I totally distracted myself. So Apple, they definitely have a viewpoint of the world, and we're going to focus on the iPhone 10. Or X, because that's their new flagship phone, and that's where they say the future is headed. And I think, yeah, full screen, great, but more importantly, got rid of the home button and replaced it with Face ID, and also enabled some augmented reality capabilities through it. And let's focus on that. And so I'm going to start off. I'm going to talk about Face ID, what it is, what it isn't, how it's good, how it's bad, how it compares to other options. And if I think it's the future, spoiler, yes. And then you talk about AR, okay?
That's good. I like it.
Sweet. So I read this awesome article by Troy Hunt, and we'll link to the actual article on furloughbros.com/307. And he talks about security and the different types of security. Fun fact, did you know that the average person unlocks their phone? I'm not going to ask you to guess because I'm pretty sure I read my notes. 80 times a day.
Nice.
Yes. And now, before they introduced Touch ID, only 50% of the people actually had a PIN password. And now that they have Touch ID, over 90% of people have a password.
That's a pretty good number.
And by the way, I put, my wife was in that camp. She didn't have it. And then once they came out with Touch ID, she did.
Me too.
There you go. I did have a passcode, but it was only because HP required me to have one in order to put my email on my phone. Somehow they were able to tell if it was passcode locked or not. And so I was like, fine. So I did it. So anyway, so it's a thing. And now they're taking the next step from Touch ID to Face ID. So anyways, he talks about there's five different types of security. The first one is nothing. And he's like, don't be this person.
Yeah.
He's like, it gives free access to everyone. As a matter of fact, apparently, if you don't have a PIN ID, hackers can remotely connect to your phone, add a password, and then hold your phone ransom for you. That's a thing, apparently. And so then he goes on to the rest of them. And he makes an interesting distinction here to say, these are all different types of security. Not necessarily not secure, or not necessarily secure or unsecure. He's like, that's too binary. And if anyone says that, they don't know what they're talking about. He's like, they have different pros and cons. And you have to determine, I like this, your own personal threat profile to decide what's important to you. So like, for example, he's like, if you have an evil twin, you may not want to use Face ID.
Which is the joke they made on stage.
Exactly. Which, by the way, that's, he goes, they're also subtly telling you, this isn't perfect, guys, and that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, so the first level, the one that we're, a lot of us are familiar with, is the PIN, the personal identification number. And I know Android, they use like the swipes, which is a very similar concept to the PIN, except it's a shape, if you will. He goes, the pro about it is if you can remember a number, which most of us can, you can use a PIN. He says, the other pro behind it is that the police cannot physically force you to open your phone.
Yes.
You would have to put it in. He goes, there are some cons though. The first one, and this one's huge, is that anyone who has your PIN can use your phone. And he says, and we, there's three, I don't know, risks or bad habits that we have. The first one is we like to reuse our PINs. Confession, do you have the same PIN for your phone and your iPad?
What?
Do you have the same PIN for your phone and your iPad?
I have a different
PIN. And your watch?
I have a different randomly generated PIN for literally every service that I have.
Really? You're the man. Have you shared your PIN with anybody?
Not a single living soul ever. At one point, you're going to realize that I'm lying here.
Yeah. And then they said the other risk, obviously, which is, those are two that are just bad habits, but then there's another risk of they call it shoulder surfing. That's where someone's like looking. It's like the problem with it mostly being only numbers is those are pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
So like that could be an issue. So that's the PIN. And then what we have had for like 4 years now is Touch ID, and Android phones use this as well, or, you know, a thumbprint essentially. He goes, the really cool part about it is that there's that small friction to now opening your phone. Cause I used to be like, oh, I don't want to put in my PIN. Now it's like, oh, you just tap the home button. It's part of turning it on. Anyways, cool. The other cool part about it is you can use it in plain sight and no one can really copy you. And he says there are some cons. He's like, it's not really easy, but it has been proven that you could lift a fingerprint and like do what they do in the movies.
Yeah, you leave your passcode literally everywhere you touch.
Right. But he's like, you kind of got to know what you're doing. Like, this is not like some rando is going to go and, you know, in a bar is going to lift your fingerprint from a glass and then do it. He's like, it's not really a con. He's like, he goes, for me, it's not big on his threat profile.
You know what I used to do when I went to banks? You know how they have like the little like fingerprint print stamp when you had to like stamp fingerprint?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. I used to put my thumbprint in it and just put it all over the counter. Just be like, just in case there's ever a break-in and they like are printing for, they're like wiping prints. I'm just going to really mess with whoever's there. Get called in and be like, look at the cameras, man. I was just messing around. It seemed like fun.
You are an interesting person. Yeah. All right. this is an interesting one that a lot of people have pointed out, like an attacker. And he's like, and we're going to put this one in quotes here, is they could open your phone while you're unconscious. He was like, a lot of people were actually genuinely concerned about like their kids opening. Like, there's a story of a kid who like he used his mom's fingerprint while she was asleep to unlock the phone so he could buy $50 worth of Pokemon stuff. And he was like, I don't think the phone security is your main problem.
Right. Yeah.
He's like, but okay, fine. That's a con. And in theory,
I have surreptitiously added my thumbprints to like three or four of my friends' phones.
Nice.
They'll unlock their phones for me so I can.
Yeah.
And I'll just add it. So I can get in whenever I need.
That works. Another con would be that the police could actually force you to unlock your phone by literally putting your thumb on top there. They're not supposed to, but they could. And he said a pro, and this is actually a new feature in the new phones, is if you hold down the power button for 5 seconds or until it shows up the close the phone thing, it disables the Touch ID and it just goes straight to the PIN.
You can also pulse it 5 times, I think, is the...
Yes. Which is like, that's a little more awkward, but if you just hold it, you can do that without having to... Whatever. Anyways, so now the new generation, Face ID! Woo! So they got rid of the home button. I think we all know this. And so it has these scanners. It has... Get this. It's got an infrared camera. It's got a flood illuminator. It has a proximity sensor. It has an ambient light sensor. It has a camera and a dot projector. Whoa. So that is what makes up Face ID. And so essentially what it does is it takes an infrared image and it uses the dot pattern that it gets from there. And then it takes it and it creates, or it gets pushed through a neural network to create a mathematical model of your face. And then what it does is it, every time you log in, it compares it to that mathematical model and it is constantly updating itself. So like for me, if I didn't shave, it would update itself to go, oh, he's got a beard now. And so so it's just constantly morphing. What's interesting is some other fun little factoids about a little bit more. And Matt Panzerino had a nice interview with Craig Federighi, who kind of like went a little bit more into it. Number one, despite all the marketing pictures, there is no visible light that can actually be seen or projected on your face. This is cool. You can wear sunglasses and it still works. Because the IR goes through the shit lens. He's like, there are certain glasses that block it. And he goes, and obviously, if you wear those glasses, it won't work. Apparently, it's crazy fast. Like, if you just grab your phone and then just flick up, which is how you open it now, he's like, it's done it by then.
Unless you're on stage, actually. Did you hear about
that? Well, no. So what happened that one, yes. So he was on stage and it didn't work. And everyone was like, what? And he says, well, what happened was, they didn't even think about this, is they had people who were setting it up and the phone kept trying to recognize them. And if it fails after a certain number of times, it reverts back to the PIN. It's a safety
mechanism. Say just like the Touch ID. If you
Yes. Like if you take a shower and then try to use it and it doesn't work, it goes, I need some Touch ID now. And you go, oh, all right, fine. Exactly the same thing that happened. So it was like it did what it was supposed to do. Yay! They just, in the heat of the moment, who knows?
Yeah. He might have even recognized that in the moment. It was just like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
I don't know. So anyways, that's that. Also interesting, developers won't have, and this will be important for you, they won't have raw access to the actual data, but they will get the dot and color map in order to use. So like they won't get your raw facial data, but they'll get that mathematical model, I guess, or... Like
it'll be interesting. I wonder. Yeah. Because they've been showing that there's all sorts of information that they're gonna make. Well, it's like the actual thing that makes up the neural network, the thing that defines your face and allows them to do that. It's not going to be possible for a third party developer to get that information and store it someplace else. And like,
right. Okay.
But what you will get is like the location of the face, where the face is turned. You'll get a 3D.
Okay.
That way, because they showed
it's like, it's like an API that you can access.
Yes.
But not the data itself.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And by the way, that API and all that data, Apple's sticking with their super security stuff where it all stays on the device. Mm. So interestingly, in order to train the computers to work, they got willing participants from all over the world, literally took billions of photos. And that's what they use for their training and validation set. So when you do it, they're not going to be transmitting the data back to Apple to continue to train the algorithm. It's kind of like, they're going to be doing that independently, which is, probably not as good as what Google would do, because they would just take all your information and run their massive algorithms through it.
Right.
But you know, that's a pro and con. I don't know how you want to think about that. It's a trade-off. Let's see here. It was interesting. They talked about how like the chances of it randomly being locked with Touch ID was like 1 in 50. And then they said with Face ID, it's like 1 in 1,000,000, which he was like, it's really just like, that's a marketing thing. Cause to say like 1 in 1,000,000 is a lot, you know, like what was it? What was it? Dumb and Dumber. It was like, what are my chances? She's like, more like 1 in 1,000,000. So you're saying there's a chance.
Oh, kind of
like that was great, which is supposed to mean it's not likely, which he was like, that's not a fair comparison because you don't compare it to random happenings. It's compared to attackers. How easy is it to spoof?
Right.
Which again, one of the pros is it's resilient. Maybe we don't know yet to photos and masks. It'll still work in the dark. And if you're unconscious, it can't be open, so it overcomes some of the issues with Touch ID. Again, right. It can be used in public. It has the same pros as the
because
Touch
ID. They're using attention tracking.
Yeah, which, by the way, you can turn off if you want. That's not a requirement. It's just obviously not as secure. And then the final one is multi-factor, where you can actually do biometric and PIN. Apple does not allow that right now. And it's something that Craig says they keep thinking about. The idea would be you have to have one of the two, either Touch ID or Face ID, and a PIN. So right. It'd be two factors. Like, that'd be super secure. But currently, right now, the PIN is used as a backup. So when when your Touch ID or Face ID doesn't work, he's like, yeah, you got your PIN. So he's like, we would have to create essentially a third, like, regular password type of thing that you would have to put in or something. And it sounds like it's just like they just haven't done it yet. So Face ID is the future. It sounds pretty cool. Eventually people actually play with it and we'll learn more about the pros and cons. By the way, I'm getting the iPhone X. That's nice. What I'm doing. So I can pre-order it. What is it? October 27th. It arrives November 3rd or something like that.
Rocktober 27th.
So, yeah.
It arrives November 3rd, depending on availability.
I hope it's available for me. I hope it's available. Nice. I'm going to be up at midnight. So, and me and like a bazillion other people.
Everybody.
But it'll be exciting. So Jessie, she ended up getting the iPhone 8. So she was like, she had zero interest in it. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to spend the extra money if you have zero interest in it. So she's got her new phone. But yeah, it's pretty cool. But so that's their vision of the world, how they see security. Mm. And how that's going to go forward, and it allows them to do some other cool AR stuff. So after word from our sponsor, let's talk about some of the AR coolness that they got going on.
Nice. So this episode is brought to you by Bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Exactly. You know, it's their fruit. They're yellow on the outside. You don't have to have packaging, which is nice. You can.
That is
packaging.
Nice. It's built in. Similar to an orange. Orange, you're glad you had bananas.
For the record, if you are eating a banana, do not open it from the stem. Open it. Squeeze the bottom part.
Really? Why?
And tear it open. Because there's so much easier to open that way. And I will prove it to you.
But you squish it.
I will prove it to you with science. If you ever watch monkeys eat bananas, and they like bananas, lots of bananas.
They do like bananas.
They always open it from the bottom.
Whoa, but I am not a monkey.
Yes, but you see, the stem, the problem is the stem is a much...
It just feels wrong.
No, you get used to it.
What if I like the powerful rip? Like, it makes me feel manly.
Yeah, but it like mangles the top of the banana. It's awful.
I don't care.
No. There's only
manly rip.
I will acknowledge that there is only one downside to opening it from the bottom, which is that little gross part that sticks.
Yeah, like, I don't eat that part.
Peel. Who does? You're weird if you do. That little part normally stays in the peel. You do have to chuck that part first. But otherwise, it is a far superior method of opening the banana. Anyways. Thank you for having bananas.
That was more of a PSA than an advertisement.
go and get some apples and bananas. Anyway, so back to Apple. AR stuff. So I got three different articles that we're going to link to our show notes. If you want to go to philibros.com, check it out. and just a long list of different AR apps that are out there. All right. Some of them paid for, some of them free, some of them just cool. So first
tell me about him.
Jamie Lee from The Verge, showing off some, I think these are the free ones. Or no, these are paid ones. So Carrot Weather, I don't know if you've ever heard of Carrot Weather.
So quick question. Can I do them on my phone, which I currently still have the 7?
I'm doing it on
my phone. So you have to download an app. It's not like there's an AR app. It's
correct.
You download an app that has AR in it.
So for example, I downloaded Carrot Weather. It costs $4. And it's basically just a good weather app with a really insulting AI built into it. It makes fun of you.
Why do you spend the $4 on it then?
But they have an
fitness
AR.
Fitness Strava. AR. I have Strava.
There we go. So fitness AR is cool because it lets you, it basically projects a 3D model of your routes from your display. It's pretty neat. IKEA Places, this allows you to...
Actually, here, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it allows you to place furniture in your environment and see how they'll fit, which is nice. Housecraft is IKEA furniture, but just ridiculous. And it has like random...
There's also a disaster feature.
Yes, and they're physically realistic. Measure Kit is one of those you've seen.
Oh man, I'm getting that one.
Oh, I've already got a
box.
Already got a couple of the Measure apps. They do cost money. It's sort of frustrating, but they work real good. Yeah, Tape Measure is another one. Euclidean Lands is a game you can play in it. Splitter Critter is a game that everybody plays, and it basically this one's kind of neat because it's. It basically just allows you to play the game on a surface. Like you can project it onto a wall, which you'd be like, okay, yeah, but why would I do that if it's just a 2D game played on 2D? Because it's not like that. This is a game all about perspective, and it's a very neat way to allow you to change perspective and stuff, and it's cool. They're fun, so I'd go check that out. We've also got, I'll go through a couple more, TechCrunch, by Fitztepper. They got Stack AR is a cool game that allows you to just play in real world. Thomas and Friends, which is like Thomas the Train. But you can create courses and then have them play in the real world, which is kind of neat. What was the first one? They've got World Brush, which allows you to paint in 3D space. Edmunds, so you can see the size of cars and stuff in your workspace. Yeah, they've also got a Bricks AR. It's another game. I mean, obviously, we're just kind of going through these, and they're all like full game. You can do Chess AR, which just is an AR chessboard on a table. It's not that crazy, except that you're like, well, that's cool. Night Sky, I've heard, is really neat.
Location. Wait, I think I have Night Sky. Would they have like an update then?
Yeah, pretty much. They've also got a complete anatomy that allows you to see, and it's really neat. It works well. It works well enough. But the basic flow for all these apps is the same. What you end up doing is you open up the app. And then it scans the room, and you have to focus on a surface. And it uses that surface to create an entire surface for that you're going to be existing on. It uses that for its depth reference, which is important for what it's going to do. But then it starts allowing you to project these 3D images through your screen onto this flat surface. One of the consequences of that is like the Tape Measure apps. If you want to measure in a different, let's say you want to measure something that starts on the ground, go across, and then go up along a wall. It's not great at that because it sees the surface of the world going out in continuing on that plane, and so the measurement can actually be off. Oh my gosh, I'm actually getting electrocuted by my headphones.
That's bad, right?
Yeah, it is really bad. Why is it doing that? Like I can feel it shocking my... Anyways, I'm focused on something else. So it, that was really distracting because I was really uncomfortable. But yeah, so if you, so this is the consequence. If you want to do like a, if you want to measure a 3D shape, like the length, width, and height of a box, you can't actually do that with the measure apps right now. You can only do one plane at a time. You have to resurface the plane. That also means that for certain types of things, like the weather app that I was telling you about, what it does is it projects this like sphere with all of your information around it. It looks really cool. It doesn't do anything more than the rest of the app does. But one of the struggles with it is that if you change planes and stuff, it doesn't know how to track that. Another difficulty with it, if you put your IKEA furniture in your room, then you walk down the hall, the phone is smart enough to keep track of where that furniture should stay that entire time, which is really impressive in that its ability to do that, combining all the different motion tracking of the phone with the tracking of the visual features and key point tracking as you're moving. But the problem is, if you walk down the hall, then turn back around at where you put the furniture, what you would hope to see is the wall. You would hope to not see the furniture because there's now a wall in the way.
Right.
But it doesn't see the wall. So it still projects this now phantom hanging correct perspective, correct size of the furniture, but it's just phantom hanging over your wall. It's completely broken the illusion. So for certain sorts of things like projecting 3D images that are really easy to move around and investigate in large open spaces or on tables, the thing is great. For giving you realistic sizes, so you can actually see, like you can, one of the apps allows you to create a box of a given size and then place it in a room, which is awesome if you want to see, if you know how big a piece of furniture is, for example. But this is the limitation, but there's limitations to it. So what I'm excited to see is, oh, and this is the other thing. It works on the iPhone 5S, which is a over 4-year-old phone now. It works on phones as old as that. I guarantee you that internally, the iPhone 10 has solutions to these problems already. They're just really computationally expensive to do. And the older phones can't do it. And Apple's not about to start segmenting the backlog of their phones that much. Mm. So I think what you're going to see is year after year, you're going to see huge improvements in this. You're probably going to watch Android and Google go further faster with these sorts of like clipping the graphics so that it'll hide behind walls. Or if you pass in front of a grate, it'll actually clip the grate. It's just a better overall 3D, like building a 3D mesh of the world as you move through it. And then including those things in the 3D projections. You're going to watch Apple work on that slowly over time as they introduce new hardware, but you can see Google iterate on that as quickly as they possibly can.
Yeah.
But Apple's will always work. The features that they do have will work incredibly well across their entire fleet of 5-year-old phones. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where Apple goes with all of this. I wish I could see what they're doing internally because I'm sure it's pretty dang impressive. But, and this is fun. It's actually, I'm already finding it somewhat useful, especially for like the measuring stuff and just for visualizing things in 3D space. I've already found use for it. I do think it's going to be of limited super usefulness, for this year and probably I would even guess the next 2 or 3.
Hmm.
If I'm honest, on the phone, you know, if they come out with a pair of glasses before that, specifically designed for it, that might be a different conversation. But on the phone, I would say probably about 3 years out before you see some really, really, really sophisticated apps, unless companies like Facebook innovate on top of what the information that Apple's already giving and they're building their own API calls, which they very well might. So
yeah,
we'll see. I don't know. It's cool stuff. It's interesting. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, that is. I'm downloading the night sky
app
right now.
Nice.
That was the price was right for where I'm at in this moment. And I'm doing it on my iPad because I want a big canvas.
That's the other thing is I want a much bigger phone to do all this stuff on.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Okay, I got it. It's installed and it's now loading forever. And this is my new norm. Okay, so yes, thank you. Swipe, 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 blah, blah, blah. What the heck? Wants me to do geolocation? Sure. Push notifications? No. Grant access to the camera? Yes. Why would it want to send me push notification about stagerizing conditions, object rise times? No. Oh, type. So apparently this is a subscription I get.
Oh, geez.
I don't know. AR. Boom. Okay. It's over my room. There's a booties right in front of where I'm sitting. Jupiter. Mm. Jupiter's like, if I were to just literally look straight forward, I would see Jupiter.
Nice.
And the moon. Apparently my moon is over there. Saturn. That's actually pretty stinking awesome. Okay. All right. Night sky. That's very cool. So AR, huh?
Yeah, man. It's good stuff.
It's progress, but not quite there yet.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, that's kind of, you know, to answer the question of that we started this show with, for me, does iPhone's understanding of the world work? I'd say it's showing a promising start. I think Face ID is ready for prime time for what they're doing with it. I think that ARKit is going to need some continued serious work. And I have a feeling that Apple is hampered by the fact that they're trying to make this software available to five generations worth of phones.
Mm. And it's chicken and egg issue, right?
Yeah.
I get it.
What
totally.
works well, but, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the cool things about the Face ID is it does open up the potential future for what they call identity computing, where essentially, like, I think of it as like profiles. You know how if you have like a computer, you have your own, like, you click on your username and you type in your password and it pulls up your profile. Like, they could have that, but it's just Face ID, where if you do the phone, it opens your settings and stuff, and then if your girlfriend does it, it's her settings and stuff. And so,
oh yeah, it'd be awesome.
You can start to share profiles. Like, that's been like a huge request for years,
right?
Especially on iPads. Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited. I'm going to get it. I'm going to try it out. And but it seems promising. It seems secure enough for my. I don't have a high threat profile, if I'm honest. So, I'm not super worried about it. But that's me. Cool, man. So, question for you, the listener, is, are you going to use Face ID? Are you going to get an iPhone? Which iPhone are you going to get? The X, the 8? And would you use Face ID if you had the option? Even if you're not, let's say you're Android. Let's say they came out with a Face ID-ish type of thing that actually worked. Dig!
Oh.
Would you use it? Why or why not? We'd love to hear from you in the comment section. And so with that, we're going to call this week a wrap. We're going to have all sorts of articles about things that we didn't talk about. Like, for example, there were some cool photos that were taken of the actual iPhone event itself with their new campus and stuff. Pretty cool. You should check it out. They did also announce other products. We'll have a link to those as well if for whatever reason you're under a rock and didn't hear about them. So you can read about those too. But those are our thoughts on Face ID and ARKit, which are probably the big tentpole things. So with that, thank you for joining us. We totally appreciate it. Again, you can check out all these links to the show on furloughbros.com/307. Also, please subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. And we would like to say thank you. I got two people I want to say thank you to. The first one being Troy Hunt. That was a great article on security. And then Matthew Pazzarino, for his interview with Craig Federini.
Awesome. And thank you, Damian Lee with The Verge, Fitztepper with TechCrunch, and Johnny Evans for Computer World for compiling those great lists of all the available AR apps out there.
Yeah. And finally, this podcast is sponsored by listeners just like you and bananas. With that, I am James Furlow. And my rockin' brother in the Tober is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.
Thank you.